Guys, good afternoon, good morning. Welcome back to the Perpetua podcast. It is your host here, James Rankin. And today I am absolutely delighted to be joined by one of my heroes, I suppose, in a weird kind of way, Logan Gelbich. Logan, how are you, man?
I'm great. This is rad. It makes me nervous to hear you say that, but the respect is very mutual.
Thank you very much. Logan, just for the people who don't know you, give us the elevator pitch. Who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, I think the shortest story possible is I'm a former athlete turned chronic entrepreneur. and I think maybe the biggest reason why we're talking here is I own gyms, and those gyms are strength and conditioning, kind of performance-oriented places. And those businesses are a bit of a front for a developmental conversation. So what makes that company quite unique is we, just as much as we focus on making money selling our services, we develop leadership, and that invites a whole other conversation that has led to, you know, me writing a book and teaching seminars and all the other kind of random things that I do.
Awesome. I think you've downplayed that massively, but yeah, you cover a lot of bases. I suppose for the people who are listening, the reason I want you on and wanted to talk to you so much is because obviously you own Juice Gyms in LA. And what initially attracted me to you guys was your coach's prep course. And things like continuing education and development are something that I value massively and think is something that is undervalued, especially in the fitness space. So that was the big attraction. And then over time, I've realized you do all these other things. And one of the word you use a lot, which I've started using a lot because it clicked with me, is transcend, and being able to transcend the fitness into every other aspect. And that's something you probably do better than a lot of people, where you can take something from your fitness, your gym, your business, and take that to another business, to something completely separate, non-related, yeah, and make that work. How do you find that transition from the gym to, say, your business prep course and writing a book and all that other stuff?
Yeah, I mean, all of the things that seem to transcend one another are quite deliberate. I mean, just quite frankly, I'm aware of that, and I'm doing it on purpose. And the reason why I'm doing it on purpose is this is at the heart of what I think is the most important focus for any person, anyone listening, is, you know, we don't have very many innate jobs on earth. And one of those very few jobs is to evolve, you know? And so I'm really interested in development, and I'm pretty agnostic as to what kind. And so every person listening right now has a certain level of dominion or understanding over who they are and what they can do. And in order to sort of enroll in that job that I just talked about of evolution, it sort of asks us to expand that arena of dominion of who you are and what you can do, and grow it bigger and bigger. And so everything that I just said sort of presupposes that we have an edge where it starts to get blurry or hard or difficult to get to the next step, right? And to super oversimplify what I'm saying, we can just look at the path that many sort of gym owners go on, right? Which is, I am an athlete, and then I become a better athlete, and then I become the maybe the best athlete on my little neighborhood block. And then, you know, and then this thing has such an impact that the obvious next step is, well, I need to share this and coach it. And then to coach it would require a little bit more mastery. And you see how this goes. Now, to become a coach does not divorce you from being an athlete, right? You're a coach who is also an athlete. Mm-hmm. Whereas before you were just a coach. And this sort of transcend and include process can extend beyond, well, now I'm a gym owner that is leading other coaches who are leading athletes, right? And then for me, the challenge that I put on myself, this is less about selling new services in the world, was like, well, could I coach other coaches to coach other coaches? All right. And then it becomes like, well, could I coach other people to lead businesses and coach other subordinates in businesses that I don't even know about? Right. And it goes on and on and on forever. Right. Now, that's sort of like the new expression of my life. But this sort of observation you've made about transcendence didn't really start on purpose. Like the first instance of this sort of transcendence was almost like based on ignorant survival. So the first time I quote unquote transcended anything was I got fired from my job as a baseball player. Okay. And so I spent like my whole life like trying to be the best in the world at this sport. And then I kind of didn't really do that. You know, I got like sort of close.
Yeah.
And then that ended. And so one of the cool lessons that's taught to anyone who's passionate enough or dumb enough to play a sport with as much failure inside of it as baseball is you really have to learn this high performance perspective. And it's I think it's a high performance perspective, and it's also a coping mechanism so you don't go crazy when you let me take one step back. Baseball is so filled with failure. You know what I mean? Like you could be the best in the world. Like, let's just say someone today is getting paid $30 million a year to play baseball, and he will just fail most of the time.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like you don't win, you don't dominate in baseball, yeah. Right? Right. Okay. So forgive my rant here, but I think this is important. Is one of the things that you learn on that path is you really have to be extremely discerning about what you can control and what you can't control. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I learned that lesson in a very micro way. Like, well, I don't feel so good at the plate right now, and I'm having a lot of failure in the previous 5 games, and it just doesn't help me to think about that. It helps me to focus on this moment. So long story short, when I got released from my contract, it didn't really pay and it didn't really help me to think that I would have to start life over again, right? Like if I made it to, let's say, the PhD level of baseball, and then I got fired, and then I had to start a new career. To me, it just felt not helpful to think that I had to start in primary school again and yeah. build my way back up, right? I sort of had to ask myself, well, like, what about that sort of PhD that I just got? Could I get a head start in the next thing? And that is where I was forced to do this transcendence thing. Without reading any books about it or having any conversations about it or even knowing what that is.
Yeah. Right?
And so now, once you know how it works, you know, you can use it to your advantage. You know, so that's what I'm trying to do now, is like on purpose transcend.
Yeah. Awesome. That's for a rant, that was very articulate, and I knew exactly where you're going with it. It was brilliant. So how then have you used... You said, like, what age were you whenever you finished playing baseball?
I think I was 24 23 or 24.
And how long was that, like, the thing? Like, how long were you working on that?
6 years old, so almost 20 years.
20 years. Yeah. How then have you taken that peak performance and attention to detail and use that, and how do you reinforce that, if you can, with other people, the people who work with you, for you, and who come to the gym?
Yeah, I think context is important. So look, anyone who's spent any time in the gym or, you know, trying anything difficult sort of knows that getting better is uncomfortable and getting better is hard. I'm speaking in cliches already, right? And so, you know, but here's a part of this that's critical, that's talked about less, which is that if the desire, or you could interchange the word desire, like if the purpose is strong enough, then most people will tolerate and be willing to do what we know is the best way to practice. And this is deliberate practice, right? Anders Ericsson is the champion of this concept. And so I think people miss this part, okay? And sometimes it's like a very Instagram inspirational quote heavy world, right? Where it's like, just choose the hard thing and like embrace the suck and whatever. And the caveat is you need to be trying to do something that's worth embracing the suck for.
Yes.
Okay. So for me, that was baseball for a while. And then now, you know, training or entrepreneurship. Okay. And so first and foremost, development needs a North Star worth pursuing, because what I'm obsessed with, and probably the reason why I'm on your podcast, one of the reasons, is I'm so interested and I feel like I can articulate the process of development that maximizes our performance in anything.
Yeah.
Now, to misunderstand what I'm about to say would not include this North Star thing. Okay. Like, I think I know development pretty well. And guess what? I'm not going to be a world-class t-shirt folder. Like, I'm doing like kind of laundry right now. And I'm probably like, I don't know, the third worst t-shirt folder in the world. And excuse my, it's like, I just don't give a shit. Like, I'm just going to fold this thing as good as it needs to be to sort of get in the drawer. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. But if I care about something more than I care about it in the world, like I did baseball, like I do the Deuce brand, I will fucking die before I do that practice in a less than efficient way. Okay. And so, when to answer your question again, I couldn't be more long-winded at this point. to answer your question, we need to create a thing that we have great desire for, and then we can engage in the deliberate practice. And so, what you know is critical to our process is sort of a rite of passage where the people who are willing to go through this rite of passage, they have taught themselves and taught everyone around them that they really want to do this. They want to be great. And that is sort of the starting line for great development.
Cool. That's interesting. The way you've said, the way you've finished that is, so for those who don't know, the process to work in your gym is you have to do coaches prep, and then maybe you might perhaps get an opportunity to be a coach at your gym.
Yeah.
But that's just the entry point.
Yeah. And it's a paradox, right? It's on the sort of bad news side is it's definitely longer, harder, more uncomfortable than probably working at any other gym.
Yeah,
that's, you know, I mean, folks come here with like 10 years experience. Like I know who they are, like mutual respect. They're just professionals, true professionals. And they could make money tomorrow at like 10 other places, but they have to sort of go through this process that everyone else has gone through. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine all of the mutual advantages to that. I mean, it just, if you look around the world, there's all of the best teams in the world have a similar process, whether it's explicit or implicit. You know, when I was a baseball player, everyone got recruited, right? And so there's a mutual respect, like you belong to be in this locker room. You know, if in the 10 minutes before the game, they pulled a fan out of the stands and brought him into the locker room, there's no possible way that the group would have mutual respect for the sanctity of this thing, right?
Yeah.
And so this process, Coaches Prep, is it's a stretch. It by the end, you would have demonstrated a certain willingness and develop a certain level of trust to where we can just operate at a higher level as a team. Mm-hmm. And the course continues on forever based on what we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, which is that it's kind of like this heat-seeking missile for your edges, right? And so how we grow is at the edge, and everyone has a different edge. So I'll give you some examples. There's an individual in the program who has never coached anything before ever, but this is a curiosity, and she is demonstrating her edge by simply being in the room and trying to keep up, right? And go through the testing process, all these things. But when you have someone who has been an employee for, let's say, 7-8 years now and been coaching for 10, that edge is different. And that edge is sort of moved along by sharing leadership, meaning he or she would lead a session and be held to the capacity to teach fringe level efforts, right? And so everyone, myself included, is supposed to be vulnerably expanding their edge, right? And so Coaches Prep isn't just a rite of passage, it's continuing development. And I'll just throw like one caveat out there because this is important before I forget. The best teams in the world have a rite of passage, okay? The best teams in the world also have rigorous continuing development. You know, like a Navy SEAL goes through hell to become a Navy SEAL, but that's where it begins for them. They must be sharpening their sword, because you don't send a liability into war and get their friends killed because they aren't operating at the edge of their ability. Now, some organizations misunderstand this whole rite of passage thing, and they have a rigorous rite of passage, and then that's where it ends.
Yeah.
And that creates the opposite effect, a toxic environment where the people inside the organization resist newcomers and create perceived safety and security by being inside. And then they just get worse every day until they retire. And there are some organizations here, not all of them are like this. I don't want to offend anybody who's listening, but you know, it's like the really overweight policeman who can't be a proper policeman or firefighter or whatever. And they're sort of protected with great benefits, and they'll do this thing. And the infrastructure of having done a boot camp thing 20 years ago, but now they're actually worse at their craft than they were day one. And coaching is ripe for that mistake.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of people who can't wait to tell you, I've been a personal trainer for 25 years. And if you utter those words to me, you're trying to demonstrate your value in the world by telling me how many years you've done it. There's actually a greater likelihood that you're poor at your job than if you said, I've been doing this 3 years and I'm hungry.
Yeah.
You know, so the course, the idea is that we are structured in a way to where we will naturally, by our own nature, get better over time. That's the goal.
Yeah. So how do you do that with people then? How do you continue to push the guys in your team, and how do they push you to continue to get better?
So, yeah, I think the framework is best to share first, and then we can talk about specifics because, again, talking about transcendence, like the specifics maybe don't matter. They matter if the person listening to this is specifically trying to get coaches of group training, strength, and conditioning better, which maybe some of them are. But I think it's helpful to like learn how to fish first, right? Okay, so it's very simple. There are three sort of critical ingredients to, we'll say, Anders Ericsson's concept of deliberate practice. Okay, so the first of which is we need to have a clear, so more objective than subjective, a clear stretch goal. Okay, so everything that I just said assumes two main things. Clear, meaning did the ball go in the hoop or not? Okay. And then a stretch, meaning it can't be a slam dunk. Like the hoop needs to be far enough away. Okay. And so there's a certain intensity of focus that happens when the hoop, so to speak, is far enough away.
At
Okay.
the edge.
At the edge, yeah. Where failure is present. Okay. The second critical piece is immediate informative feedback. Okay, so let's just keep running with the basketball example. The goal can be clear, either the ball goes in the hoop or not. The task can be a stretch, meaning the hoop is far enough away to where it's doable but difficult. But the feedback is just as important as those things. So if you blindfold me, or if you put a curtain in front of the hoop, and I take 1,000 shots today, I can't get better.
Who knows? Yeah.
I could even hire you to make specific notes, or I could say, James, film this for me, and we're gonna watch the tape after when I take the blindfold off. I will have practiced 1,000 times, right? Like, that's good. We think practice is good, yeah. But it's not helpful to me to learn about that this third shot went to the left and the fifth shot went long and all of these things
Because you
later,
couldn't change
right?
it, yeah.
Yes, okay. So, and then the third element is this repetition. And everyone knows that. Everyone thinks that practice is good, but that's practice is not good, you know? Like, when I speak with folks at the Hold the Standard Summit, I give a couple examples, but like, you know, one that's good for just listening to this podcast right now is like driving. You know what I mean? No one listening to this got better at their driving skills in the last 2 years. Everybody's
Whoa.
fucking driving, but
Yeah.
you're not getting better, right? You're plateaued. Yeah. So,
Wow.
but for good reason though, right? Like, we don't want to like
Yeah.
judge, like, I didn't get better driving, and I don't want to get better at driving because I need to save energy to just get to the place I'm going. I'm good enough at driving. But it's really a problem when your whole livelihood and your expertise in a particular thing is dependent upon improvement and you're not getting better. Yeah, most coaches are not getting better after a couple of years. And that's true of surgeons and other high skill folks. Okay. The literature says that. I don't know any surgeons, but so those three elements are critical. Okay, clear stretch goal, immediate informative feedback, and repetition. And I think the thing that makes Deuce most specifically interesting in this way is we have openly made it clear to all people involved that this organization, fortunately or unfortunately, runs on negative feedback.
And
That immediate informative feedback is how we get better. We have to create an environment where we can exchange the information that'll make us better in order to resist the sort of natural human tendency of avoiding that. You know, it's hard. It's hard to give feedback, it's hard to receive feedback. Doesn't feel worth it most of the time, Right. And so if we rely on those natural tendencies, then we will do what most organizations do, which is literally prevent ourselves from improving by supporting a culture that does not share negative feedback. So we just do the opposite. Like, we just completely embrace the negative feedback thing, both formally and informally. So if you want to work with us on this team, you kind of have to get over the warm and fuzzy desire to just be complimented all the time.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's the general kind of framework, and then kind of the beginning of some of the specifics on how that happened.
So with the negative feedback thing, that's like the most anti-Irish thing in the world. We like, it's either positive feedback or keep your mouth shut. Generally, like, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. And we take that from our personal lives into not everyone and not every industry, but into most professional lives. Like, I obviously work in the gym. We sure as shit don't give each other negative feedback as coaches in the gym. Even I ask my clients for feedback, and it's always, to use your words, like, fuzzy and warm.
Yeah.
But then the conversation I then have with them is, well, I can't get any better, or I struggle to know where to get better without the, do you know what? This isn't actually great.
Yeah.
So how do you, maybe the culture in your area is different, but how do you get people to embrace that? Or is it literally just, it's not comfortable, it's not comfortable, it's not comfortable?
Yeah. I don't, I want to acknowledge cultural differences, right? I've spoken in, you know, probably 12 or 13 different countries. And for me to assume that everyone is going to have a worldview that a white male from Southern California in the United States in 2020 would have or whatever is silly. I don't assume that. For example, you know, New Zealand has like the tall poppy syndrome, right? Like, culturally, it doesn't pay to stick out and achieve and rise above, you know? And so how do you internalize that? And I want to acknowledge that, okay, we have this cultural tendency to speak to the positive or say nothing, but we have opportunities here. And the opportunities that I'm going to share with you are the same as they are in like a gung-ho, ruthless, like New York or Los Angeles, right? Which is more open to negative feedback. And the opportunities are, we have to think of the circles of kind of influence and intimacy in your life, especially work life, as like rings is how I imagine it. So very close to you, like close to home, so to speak, there's a really small ring of trust and willingness. And then as you move out, there's just less and less and less. Okay. So like a business partner or a coworker generally has closer, more intimate proximity to you than the person that you pass in the grocery store, right? Yes. And so, I'm oversimplifying, but hear me out. It's the reason why you don't go to the person in the grocery store and you say, hey, get your act together. Your outfit looks sloppy, right? It doesn't work.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it's a joke, but you sort of get where I'm going here. That sentence doesn't really work with anyone, but you can imagine that as you get closer to this level of intimate sort of trust and willingness, that more communication like that is appropriate.
Yes. Okay.
Maybe we're not making fun of each other's outfits, but it's more appropriate. Now, I see the positive intent of you reaching out to your clients and being like, I want to get better. I'm your coach. Give me feedback. But I would push back on you and say, that's probably not the best person to ask.
Okay.
One, because, well, let me take a caveat. There are some things that they could share that they are an expert in, which is like their experience with you as a, you know, as a customer. But I would sort of push you to level up that that's not really what you need. You need a more believable expert in your field to give you feedback that will make you better in your field. I think a lot of professionals, you know, I understand that the quote unquote customer is always right, but your customer in a gym context does not get to express their feelings about the programming. They don't get to express their feelings about how often you deadlift, or they are, excuse me for saying this, but they're ignorant. They're paying you to be to the tell expert. Them.
Yeah,
that's right. So I would encourage you to, especially if with your kind of cultural sort of block, potentially, to go even closer, right? Yeah. Like you need to go to the folks that are on the same page as you in terms of what I had talked about earlier, is this desire to get better is greater than a desire to maintain the peace, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. And on top of that, generally, it pays to go first, kind of like you're going, like you're doing, saying like, hey, I need to be better. I want to be better to work with. I need your help in seeing what I cannot see about my weaknesses, right? Rather than being the first to give feedback to them. The second thing that I would offer you is be highly specific. Because if you go to, whether it's a customer, which I wouldn't recommend, or a coworker, and you're like, hey, give me feedback. Like, how can I be better? It's like it's a massive question that is very general and vague. And if they have a list of six things in their head, they're going to tell you like, I wish you'd play different music, because it's easier to say that I think you're condescending when you are overwhelmed with your schedule or something like that, right? So being specific is better, meaning like, hey, James, it's been great working with you. And like, I've found that it's really hard to get good feedback. My clients won't give it to me. Do you think you could take a few days and like, Wednesday, maybe, you know, you shoot me an email, or maybe if you see me, I'll grab you for 5 minutes. But I just need like two specific things that you've seen that I could get better at.
Yeah.
And then it's like, all right, we have a time, a day, and how many things to offer up. And then that, I think, gets much better response than you being like, tell me how I suck.
Yeah. And that's going to help. And that's going to help me more as well. And then develop the relationship between me and that person where maybe this becomes a more frequent occurrence.
100%. If you said that to me and on Wednesday we met up and I gave you two things, even if we shook hands and left immediately after that, you better bet that I'm getting in the car thinking about, fuck, what are my two things?
Yeah.
Right. And now it feels more appropriate. Mm-hmm. I feel more comfortable asking you about that.
Yeah. Wow. That's a really good way to look at it, and something I'll definitely implement going forward. Going back to kind of leadership a little bit then, what, in your experience, I suppose this is a great time to talk about it because the world is upside down. I don't know what things, your gym's open at the minute, isn't it?
So the Venice location is open. Both the Hollywood and Hermosa Beach locations are operating in the park because they don't have an outdoor area like Venice.
Oh. Well, we are, the gym I work in has been closed now for 11 weeks. And wow. it's been closed on and off since literally this time last year. But where was I going with this? Like, this is what it was. When your gym did close, you were very proactive and you have sourced dumbbells, and my current girlfriend, her parents were asking, I was telling them about the dumbbell, the Delta Bravo thing you do. And they were like, oh, like, could we get involved with that? And a lot of leaders haven't been as proactive. What do you see as the biggest differentiator between, say, yourself and these other leaders who have just kind of sat down and went, well, I'll just wait till the gyms open again?
Yeah. I think, again, I want to have massive compassion for this time because it's affected so many people in like very significant ways. Like, it's not like a laughing matter. No. And it's been, you know, this hasn't been a slam dunk for anyone, us included. I do think that there are lessons in there. So if it's too soon, then like maybe just don't listen. But this is a greater expression of what we've already known about something as general as even like happiness, right? And the science of happiness on like a neurochemical level is like, it's impossible to be happy and to be a victim at the same time. And victim meaning that your circumstances are completely outside of your control. Okay. And the way that victims, even people in extreme scenarios where, you know, no one would argue with calling them a victim, you know, prisoners of war, you know, like victims of grave injustice, you know, these types of things. Even the folks that navigate those experiences, which I have no experience with myself, historically and like in the literature, demonstrate agency, meaning that they choose to think that they have some control over their life. It's how people can be happy and be in prison for a crime they didn't commit, right? And agency is finding out what you have control over and taking action there, right? Like prisoners of war, for example, people who are like tortured and starving in a POW camp will do things that seem very counterintuitive to people like you and me who are in a nice home with refusing food, like a hunger strike. Yeah. So why would someone who's hungry and beaten and in prison do that? It's because they can. It's like the last thing that they can do to choose, right? Yeah. Now, throughout our lives, external factors, external events will happen to us, right? Mm-hmm. And then it just becomes a game of deciding what about your existence is inside of your control and placing your focus there, right? Yeah. And that is true agency. Well, for the folks like myself in the fitness industry, when worldwide your industry becomes illegal, your business is illegal, it was still another practice in, well, do I choose victimhood, right? Do I say, well, my hands are tied, like the governor or the president says I can't do my work. Mm-hmm. Or do you choose what parts of this is inside of your control? And so for us, it was like, all right, well, the constraints are very different. You can't go to the gym anymore, anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
But we, as a team, we know training really well. So, okay, so what if the new rules were you had to be at home? How do you do strength and conditioning at home? Like, not everybody has a big garage with a barbell. It's like, what's the smallest dose to create the biggest change? Okay, we could do a lot with the dumbbell. It gives us double the versatility, blah, blah, blah. Okay, let's write a program that you could do in a telephone booth and it would cost almost nothing. And it would scale our company and maximize this new constraint. And that's Delta Bravo. Wow. And it is the most incredible program I've ever seen, specifically because of the constraints.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just when you're kind of pushed back into a corner, it's what that kind of could feel like. We just attacked.
Yeah,
we just attacked, and we were on fire, man. Like, just everybody working quadruple overtime for half the money and no certainty. But it was like one of the most alive moments of my life.
Wow.
Because it was choosing this agency. And it really, to your point, it really didn't pay for people to like sit back and figure out what the, it just was very different, you know? Yeah. And apparently, I don't, again, I'm ignorant. I don't know anything as a civilian, but apparently in the military, high level sort of teams talk about the ambush, you know, when you're sort of on patrol and you get ambushed, mm-hmm. like the proper response is not to do anything but attack the ambush.
Yeah.
You know, it's like taking the power back. And I feel like we really chose to take the power back. I mean, we closed the gym before it was mandated. And we just said, we're going to charge 150 miles an hour at this thing rather than like let it hit us. You know?
Yeah. Awesome. And I suppose that kind of goes back into like your deliberate practice where it's just you kind of went, well, we've done this thing. We know strength and conditioning, like you said, so let's do this now, put our practice into practice and see if our program works without our gym.
And totally. And to me, it was less of, I mean, maybe this is my, I'm shedding light on my preferences or I don't know, but to me, it was less about the training. I don't really put yeah. training on a pedestal. I don't think it's that hard. I don't think it's that complicated. I think, you know, it doesn't help anyone to perpetuate this story that like there's a mad lab scientist in a basement who's like writing the best program and we're all trying to figure out what that program is. I don't think any of that. To me, it was more of a test of our leadership, less yeah. of can we figure out the reps and sets. I mean, anyone should be able to figure that out, I think. But, you know, I get on airplanes, I go around the world and I teach adaptive leadership and these yeah. deliberately developmental like organizations to people all around the world.
So and can you do it?
I've never been really tested, right? It's kind of like, you know, I'm a newbie in jujitsu, for example, right? So, yeah. So you roll jujitsu and it's like, imagine rolling jujitsu your whole life and you're a brown belt or a black belt or whatever. And then someone fucking taps you on the shoulder at the ATM and try, you know, it's like, where are we at? Oh, like, yeah. This is the test. Like, let's go. And a good pandemic that shuts down fitness worldwide was a really good test if we could throw down.
Awesome.
You know, and I feel good about that.
That is phenomenal. I think that's a pretty good place, man, to start wrapping it up. I've taken a lot from that. Is there anything, you've wrote a book, you own a gym, you have multiple courses. You're now part of this agency standard thing.
Yep.
What's that about?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I started a new company on January 1st and it's full. We're a creative agency. So basically, you know, I guess we could tie it into transcendence. You know, I do a lot of consulting and, you know, coaching of adaptive leadership, like I said, and these, you know, building fringe level organizations. But, you know, a part of that is communicating value into the world. How do you create brand and how do you develop brand and communicate that? And so my co-founder and I, Nikki, we have a creative agency called Agency Standard. And we work with companies across disciplines to execute on brand. And we're not just a marketing agency. It's sort of top down, all inclusive creative, but it's been a wild ride, man. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. We're working in TV and film, music industry, you know, consumable products, some brands that are really close to home for us.
Awesome.
And it's been great. Yeah. It's been incredible. So I don't know if anyone's listening that, you know, is trying to make moves in the world with their brand, but yeah, we can help. And so, yeah, I think this all to me is just that they're vehicles to practice what we've talked about on here.
Yeah. I was just about to say that you're just finding another edge that you want to.
Yeah. That's it. On. You know,
and it's awesome.
So yeah. I'm excited to, you know, for travel to get back to normal and I can come visit you. And
yeah, we'll have to get you here. I met Vinny a few years ago, actually. He was, wildest story. I think I started following you and your gym.
Yep.
He was tagged in a post and I thought he looked kind of cool or whatever. And I followed him and about a week or two later on his Instagram story, he put up a photo of Dublin.
I know this exact time. I know this
and
exact
I was
moment.
Like,
yeah.
I was like, what the? I just said, dude, I've only started following you. I kind of followed Juice and Logan and the thing. I'm at this gym, this location. I'm taking class tomorrow morning at this time. It's on me. Come in.
Yep.
I'd love to meet you. And like he trained and we went for breakfast and I was just like, this is crazy. Yeah.
I remember that. So he was out there making his way through Dublin to meet me in London for the
Holden
Standards
Summit.
Yeah. So yeah, he lives 6 miles south of me and decided to take the summit 5,000 miles east of here.
Of course. Of course.
Like you do. Awesome. No, he's a legend.
He's a great guy.
He's one of our coaches, a true pro, been doing it a long time. He's leading an open water ocean version of our breath and exposure program next week. So,
wow.
Yeah, Vinny's killing it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's from the outside looking in, you guys are collectively, like your organizations are. I don't like that word inspirational, but admirable in how you approach things and attack things. And it's from the outside looking in, it looks very, very successful and something that myself and other wannabe creative people and gyms and whatnot could definitely take an awful lot from.
Well, thank you so much. I can't wait to link up with you. And if anybody's interested, there's a whole part of the Deuce website devoted to kind of this education.
Yeah.
We have many courses, coaches prep, business prep, and then the summit, you know, I need to reschedule last year's Hold a Standard Summit in Barcelona. So, you know, the Europe fam want to come over and have a great time and learn some, we'll get it done. That's awesome.
Well, I can vouch for coaches prep. I'm about 21 weeks through coaches prep at the minute.
Cool.
Yeah, and it's challenging. And
you're in the fun part, the leadership part.
Yeah, I'm in the leadership part now, exactly, yeah. And it's, like on my Instagram bio, I have the word questioner because I like asking questions and I like asking questions of myself. But it's always much harder when someone, like you did earlier in the podcast where you asked the question of me and I have to go away and kind of go, and Cara did this with me last week too, where I go, damn.
Mm-hmm.
And I just take a bit of time and then hopefully come back a slightly better person, coach, human being.
That's the goal.
That's the goal. Awesome. Logan, if people want to find out more about you, listen to you, read your stuff, where can they find you?
Yeah, I'm at Functional Coach on Instagram and Twitter. The Deuce Gym website is a good resource. Deuce Gym/University is where you can find all those courses. And my book, Going Right, is available on Amazon. There's also an audiobook that I've read, if that's interesting to anyone. And I'm not hard to find.
Yeah. Awesome. Logan, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you. This is great.
Cheers, guys. Thanks very much.